This is The Coaching Inn, a podcast from 3D Coaching. Hi, welcome to The Coaching Inn. My name's Claire Pedrick, and today I'm in conversation with Ed Allsworth-Peter. Now, Ed's trained as a coach, and he works for the Church of England. So, Ed, tell us a bit about you and how you're using coaching or seeing it used.
Yeah, so I'm Ed. I live in Sussex in the south of England, and I work around the country. I used to do that in a very physical, loads of travelling around way, but in the last months, obviously, like most people, I've been at home. And I just think it's fascinating, actually, thinking about the way people are asking questions as well as the questions that they're asking. So I was in a conversation the other day where in a meeting where somebody just said, use the question, and so, which is quite a coaching question. And I remember in our training, we practiced those sorts of questions, but it was a real killer question at the right time, because it made us all think, oh yeah, that we need to process this. Two words really shifted the way that we were talking. So I think people are asking a lot of questions at the moment, actually.
And that's a really good example, isn't it, of moving from a discussion to application?
Absolutely.
And it's very easy, isn't it? Like you must have endless conversations in your house about COVID-19, but they just kind of go round and round in circles rather than moving to action.
Yeah, because we all like to chew the cud, don't we? And it depends how we are. I know I've noticed too that some people are obviously are internal processes, other people are external processes. I'm a verbal external processor, so I kind of have to very annoyingly talk about something about 100 times with as many people who will listen to help me work it out. Whereas others I've noticed have just need to go away into their space and process. But you're right, often we don't get to the application very easily. But I wonder if we jump too quickly to the application, maybe we miss what the application is in some ways. And as well, I've been trying to advocate noticing, not diagnosing, which I know is something that's talked a lot about in 3D coaching.
Yeah.
And I think there's a bit of a rush to diagnose these last 12 weeks and what it means. And that's a natural human instinct. And in some ways we could begin to do that, but quite a lot of people I've spoken to in the last week or so saying, no, hang on, let's just keep noticing, keep listening, keep asking questions, because if we rush to diagnose and apply it, we may miss what we need to see.
Yeah, so another way that we describe noticing is say what you see, isn't it? So yeah. What do you see?
I think people, all kinds of different people doing different things. So I think some people are just hanging on until everything apparently will go back to normal, whatever that even means, or where life as we sort of knew it might resume, and we're just doing our bit to get through. We're not trying to sort of process it. I wonder if there are others who are just really struggling, which is completely understandable, who are just not wanting to think about anything. And then I think there are a third group, and I tend to work with this group a little bit in the pioneer work that we do in the Church of England, are those who are, I think, still finding it really hard, but are trying to adapt. They're trying to think, okay, this is a bit difficult, but actually, how could we think differently? How can we think around this for now as a way of, in some ways, managing and living through this really unusual experience? And then beyond that, how could we do things differently if we're going to have to do things differently because the world has changed? So perhaps it's interesting to think whether you're a hang on person, a head in the sand person, or an adaptive person.
Yeah, and whether you freeze or you go, wow, this is amazing, look at all the potential we've got here for doing things differently.
Exactly. And I think different people respond in different ways. Mm. It's also, I think what I'm also seeing or noticing is people trying to work through what they've lost, and all kinds of ways of experiencing that, aren't there? People have lost loved ones who have passed away. People have lost time. People have lost money. People might have lost confidence. I mean, all kinds of things, lost pattern, routine. I know in our house, we have young children, and my wife and I are both working from home. And oh, we've just lost our patterns of life, and I don't know how they'll resume or when, but I think we've just felt this week we've hit a little bit of a wall. Like, we've found new rituals and new patterns because we've had to, but they're wearing out now. They're not as fit for purpose as they were. So we're going to have to reframe our new rituals in this interim period before we, I guess, get back into whatever rituals exist or we create afterwards.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because at the beginning of lockdown, we thought it wouldn't last that long. Or maybe we did, but we didn't know.
Yeah.
And we're beyond temporary now.
That's the thing. And that's a great question, isn't it? How long is temporary? And how long can we cope with temporary? So there's something about how do we live with the unknown? How do we live with uncertainty? And again, I think people respond to that in different ways. Some people try to find the answer. That's how they deal with it. But I think that's quite difficult because there aren't many very easy or obvious answers to lots of questions that we're asking. So it's more about how do you live and manage uncertainty? How do you find ways to exist in that space while you have to, rather than trying to get out of it? Mm. If we can do that shift, although that's a hard place to be, I think we can cope better by living in that temporary space.
I'm reminded of that thing from Rilke that said, live the questions. You won't know the answers, so live the questions. And that's kind of what's true in your workspace all the time, isn't it?
Yeah, I love that. Live the questions. And that, yeah, exactly. That's a lot about what pioneers do. So pioneer ministers would be people who are really engaging in their community. They're, rather than starting something and inviting people to it in a particular space, they're really embedded in their communities and they're really playing with the idea of guest and host in a different way. So rather than being really great, lovely, wonderful hosts, and obviously they are lovely as well, but and saying, hey, I want to host you, it's actually saying, well, we're also guests in this space and you're also a host in this space. So what's our guest-host relationship between the people who are doing the pioneering, wanting to create something new, and those who are there? And the best phrase I found is, in the work they're doing, is for then everyone to get to a point to say, what would church look like for us, which is quite specific to what pioneers are doing, rather than, oh, here's my church, do you want to come to it? So in our world, pioneers are often, yes, living with questions. They're wanting to notice in an unbiased way. They're wanting to be conversational, collaborative. Co-creating is a phrase we use a lot. It's all about co-creating, and to do that well, you have to ask questions, and I think sometimes live the questions, as you're saying.
Yeah, as you were speaking, the co-creation was the word that came to mind for me, because of course in coaching, we co-create the conversation, and it's not my conversation, it's not your conversation, it's the thing that we create together in this time and space.
Absolutely, and I remember in the training that I did with you, talking about the ball of responsibility. Yes. Except the day that we were doing the training, I think the trainer had forgotten the ball, so we had to hunt around and he had a balloon. I actually think of it as the balloon of responsibility. But it could be a ball or a balloon. And I love the idea that actually the person who's the coachee brings the ball. The coach might share the ball, but the coach never takes the ball or holds the ball. And it's always, the ball always belongs to the coachee. Mm. And that is a great way of describing pioneer work too. It's that coaching, collaborative, co-creating, but it doesn't belong to one person actually. It probably belongs to everyone in some sense.
Yeah, sharing responsibility. It's interesting, this morning I was doing some mental health aware training and we were talking about that very same thing, about how do we share responsibility when we see something that may need attention without making somebody feel as though we've told them what to do, which of course takes away their power.
Absolutely. And a theme that we've noticed in our national Anglican community in the Church of England, we've been chatting about these themes for a while now over lockdown, and somebody really articulately talked about the importance of curating rather than initiating. And so sometimes, you know, as people, we might like to start things or do something for someone or initiate something. And that's good, that's important, that can be a really generous, life-giving thing to do. But actually, maybe the thing that is needed already exists, and it's actually about noticing it, speaking it out, making it obvious, or joining in with something and bringing your dimension to it that actually then makes it something that's useful or brings it into life in some way. So that idea of co-creating by curating, I think is quite important for now, because I think I'm seeing also a lot of innovation around. People are seeing a need and responding in some way, in their own really creative way, with not much resource, because a long time you couldn't leave your house. And it reminds me of a tweet that somebody tweeted a long time ago, probably week one of lockdown. I forget who tweeted it, but I think on Netflix at that time, the most watched films were lots of end of the world disaster films. I guess people were processing by watching something that's sort of connected in some way, which is interesting in itself. But if you look at lots of those films, the narrative at the end is normally everyone has to get onto some pod or ship or ark in some of those films before the world explodes or blows up or gets flooded or something. And often it is a race to get there. It's the survival of the fittest, and there's some very tough choices that people have to make, and that's part of the drama. But the tweet was saying actually the disaster movies got it wrong, and making the point that actually in community we haven't all raced just to get what we need. Actually, people have been incredibly generous. Community spirit has really flourished, I think, during this time. People have met people they hadn't met before, their neighbours, or they reconnect with people who might live nearby on their daily walk. So actually, there's a lot going on, and it's about maybe stepping back and seeing, hey, what's my part of curating this community? What could I do that adds to what's there, as well as what do I have that's unique that could start something?
That's really interesting, because you've articulated something I think I'd noticed but not been able to put words to, which is the idea that almost we've become more individualized because we've all gone into our little bubbles, yet simultaneously we've become more able, many of us, those of us who've got capacity to do more than survive, there's a feeling that people are doing more to work in service of others.
Absolutely. And there's lots of examples of people out there who've been making masks for the NHS at home, all that kind of stuff, just as you say, if they feel able to.
Yes, it's interesting. I'm on two Facebook groups that have started during lockdown. One is a kind of local COVID-19 thing where somebody's buying fabric so they can make scrubs, so that they can, somebody else can sew the scrubs. And, I've got some spare rice, who wants it? Kind of great, fabulous messages. And also because my mum died, I'm on the Yellow Hearts. There's a group for people who've lost somebody from COVID. And again, that's a place where in the most extraordinary way, people are giving support to one another. Even though you'd think that we'd become quite selfish in lockdown, it almost feels like it's opened up something very new and different.
I think it has. And it's the wonderful thing would be is if actually those things continued, and then actually once we all get out of our homes and in a different way, we don't forget about each other. And I'm not a sociologist, but I would imagine that the longer you're in that space and are adopting those new patterns and doing new things, the longer it will embed, the deeper it might embed, the longer that you're doing it. And it just reminds me of when we lived in London when it snowed, which was very rare, but it did twice when we lived there over 10 years, and quite a lot the second year we lived there. And everything changes in London. It's a busy city, isn't it? There's some wonderful communities in London, of course, but people often are quite busy. It's quite stressful to move around. The buses are busy, driving is really hard. But actually when it snows, everything kind of slows down. People just start talking to each other and they're helping each other, and it's a different place. But as the snow melts, so the community spirit melts, and then you just get back to normal and you start not talking to people on the underground again. So I really hope that doesn't happen, and that we continue to foster this wonderful community spirit that seems to be growing in an incredibly difficult time.
So co-creation.
Co-creation. Another thought that slightly connects to that is somebody very articulately said the other day that by being asked to stay at home and effectively do nothing, we were all doing something. There's something about what we were not doing that was incredibly important, that actually was, we were actually doing something by not doing something, by not spreading the virus around, by, and that's an interesting thought. How do you co-create when you're seemingly doing less, but you're still doing something?
Yes, but we were doing something quite significant. So I don't know if you've seen my furious tweets about politics, but there's something, isn't there, that we've actually chosen to make decisions in service of the nation and in service of other people, whereas normally we might choose to make choices in service of ourselves.
Absolutely. So
everyone who stayed at home has made a choice in service of others.
Yeah, which is a wonderful statement as a society, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And I suppose then it's maybe the co-creation is a corporate, society-wide being, isn't it? It's creating a safer space so that vulnerable people aren't infected, and that there's enough space in the NHS for those who are unwell, which is really important, isn't it?
Yeah. So going back to your context, what would be possible if we changed the way we had conversations so that they were more co-created all over the place? What's your dream?
That's a good question. I think my dream is maybe that we become slightly less activist. So another theme that's been emerging is that maybe being is the new doing, which slightly connects to that idea of actually by staying at home, we're doing something incredibly important for those around us. And sometimes, you know, we can just get too busy with the things that we're doing. We're all about starting things and setting things up and whatever, which is great. That's good stuff. But actually, at this time, when we're asking all kinds of different questions as society and as community, things like, what does it mean to be human? What does it mean to be a community? What does it mean to be a good neighbor? What does it mean to be a more present friend, even though we're physically absent? All those sorts of things. What does it mean to deal with loss? What does it mean to lament? There is a sense of doing in all of those things, but a lot of it is all about how do we be? What does it mean to be? And so I just think a great dream would be that actually perhaps we embrace a more contemplative mode of doing. So if you think about our lives as a tree, everything above the soil maps is about what we do, and everything underneath the soil is about who we are, the being. It's tempting perhaps just to think about the apple tree and the fruits sort of popping out the top of the tree, but loads of work's gone on under the soil, hasn't it, with the roots and soil. It's getting nutrients and water, and it's growing and all the stuff that happens inside apple trees. But if you compare it to a potato plant, that the produce actually happens off the roots under the soil rather than on the top of the branch. So I've been playing with the idea of what does it mean to be apples of the earth, or pommes de terre, the French word for...
Oh, very good.
Yeah, there was a link. And actually, the potato then is in the being inner space, but that's the produce. So does that become an inner doing? And in time, does that, if it's dug up, become an outward being? So what does it mean to be more of a potato than an apple, in the sense of what does it mean that our activity in our lives, the way we live out our lives, the way we connect with other human beings, how we work, how we socialize, those sorts of things, what would that mean? What would it look like if we were slightly more about being? So, you know, connecting into things of mindfulness and contemplation and asking questions, which allows us to process perhaps in a different way and form community in a different way.
I'm just thinking that a potato, I think we're about to grow potatoes. I think they got delivered this morning.
Oh, perfect timing.
I think there's something about a potato grows in service of others, doesn't it?
That's true, yes.
Because the point of a potato is that in the end it will be useful to somebody else.
Yes. And it's also part of the reproducing system, which apples are too because they have seeds in them, but it's a self-giving produce in some ways, isn't it?
Mm.
And also a lot of the growth, or most of it, actually all of it probably, is unseen. Above the ground, you still have a stem, and there are also flowers and seeds as well, although they're poisonous, I think, to eat. But a lot of it, you wouldn't even know it's going on unless you could recognize. I'm not sure I'd recognize the top of a potato plant. I don't think I know what it looks like. So there's something about the hidden work, isn't there? What goes on that maybe nobody else can see, but it's really significant and could bear fruit if it's brought to the surface in some way.
So a lot of what you've talked about this afternoon is about interconnectedness and growth and development and space to let something emerge.
I think so. And maybe isn't that sort of describing the environment that we've been in? I know, again, in conversations I've been in, people have been saying, I guess, are we in week 11 or 12 now? I can't remember, but
I don't know.
Nearly 3 months, aren't we? Something like that. That I hope we haven't wasted this time where we've had time, maybe in some cases slightly more time maybe to think and to reflect. I know in our house it doesn't feel like that at all. We've got lots of small children, and I think I felt busier than I've ever been. But I know for others actually that it has been a time to think and reflect, and so that could be something that we carry through. The interconnectedness might look quite different,
and a different way of having conversations, which is where we came into this.
Exactly. Which perhaps is more about listening than speaking. It's reminding me as well of another analogy of the fourth wall in theatre, which I've spoken about before in different places. But my wife was a West End musical theatre performer in London where we met. And I was a West End theatre chaplain. We weren't quite ever on the same show, but we almost were. And it's a really interesting place to be. And so she's much better at this than me, but the fourth wall is the wall, the proscenium arch, the sort of invisible wall between the stage and the audience, and the first, second and third walls are the wings and the back of the stage. But there's an unspoken conversation going on between the performers and the audience. If the fourth wall is up, it's as if the actors are unaware of the audience, although they always are. They're talking to each other. And the fourth wall can be lowered by having a direct conversation with the audience. So in pantomime, or if there's a sort of call and response in some way. But I wonder maybe if there are conversations that, I kind of want to go both ways with this. So maybe I'll present to you two sides of my thinking. It's either that the fourth wall is maybe slightly further up. So actually there's more of an unspoken conversation. It's much more about being aware of each other and maybe having better peripheral vision of each other in our conversations. But also I think you could argue the fourth wall is much further down, because we're actually having different conversations with different people, our neighbors, like we were saying before, for example, that we haven't had before. So maybe it's about thinking about the idea of fourth wall in our conversations. When is it up? When is it down? When is it direct? When is it indirect? When is it about noticing? When is it about speaking? It would be interesting to be aware of that in the way that we speak to each other.
So that's about timing and the choices that we make with timing.
And I wonder too if the way we speak to each other has changed over this time. Mm. I'm sure in some ways people are having slightly more stressful conversations because we're tired, busy, worried about things. But I wonder if we're also having slightly deeper conversations with people. Maybe we're asking different kinds of questions of each other, and maybe our classic British, "Oh, how are you?" "Oh, yeah, I'm fine, thanks." I mean, what does that even mean? It's a nice blanket cover for not saying anything. But I wonder if we're having less conversations where we just say, "Oh, yeah, I'm fine." Perhaps we're being more honest and open with each other. And maybe we're able to hear the other person and help them to think it through when people actually are saying, "No, I'm not really very fine." Because I think sometimes we struggle with that, don't we?
Yeah, and it feels now as though it's much more okay to not be okay. And it was interesting that Mental Health Week kind of coincided with the lockdown. And there is much more that says it's really okay to not always be flourishing.
Absolutely, absolutely. And so another theme that's quite important maybe then is about what does it mean to be fruitful which goes perhaps goes back to the potatoes and the apples, but sometimes being fruitful is about success, about achievement, about having something to show for what you've done. Whereas if you're being a potato plant, success, you can't see anything at all. It's all in a different space. And just reminds us of a book called Ambition by the Bishop of Penrith, a great read all about leadership from a Christian church perspective. And she talks about success just meaning actually from the root of the word, meaning just the next thing that comes along, the succession. Whereas I think sometimes in our society, we place the value on success as the next and better. Maybe we need to redefine fruitfulness, which means actually it's okay to say, I'm not okay. Which means it's we can say, actually, yeah, I'm really struggling with my mental health at the moment. And that's okay.
Mm. Yeah, interesting. Yes, because there have been weeks in lockdown where actually the most successful thing has been to get to the end of the day, isn't it? And people have gone in all sorts of ups and downs and rounds and abouts on the way.
I think so. And in that, exactly, in that just get to the end of the day, which does feel like a huge success, I think. Mm. Actually, then your value...
It must do in your house.
Oh, gosh, it does. Yeah. And sometimes we don't achieve that. But it makes you revalue, doesn't it? It makes you assess, well, what is important? What are we trying to achieve? Perhaps actually it's completely different set of values, different set of...
So as we come to the end of our conversation, Ed, I'm just curious, what are you taking forward into the next season in terms of conversations?
I think it's about helping people to have good conversations and maybe, and again, like we were saying, maybe to ask good questions. It's about the being as much as the doing. And I think it's... maybe it's about a greater honesty, isn't it? It's about to say, actually, this is what I think about something. So I think I feel really passionate about just encouraging, particularly leaders, to be authentic. So to step into who they are, who they're called to be, but also to work out what is the best way to equip and release that person into the leader that they are called to be. And it might look a bit different than it has before, and it will certainly look different for different people. And I think the way we find that out is by having really good conversations with those people to understand where they're at and how they might have changed, how they might have shifted in their thinking and in their approach.
And how do they best equip and lead others?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think maybe one really important quality is that of being adaptive, that perhaps we've all had to be a lot more.
Mm.
Adaptation brings some really wonderful things if you can be brave and go on that journey. You're being yourself, but you're reframing and reshaping, aren't you, in different ways.
And it means that it's okay to not know what we're doing.
Absolutely.
Confidently.
And maybe
and humbly.
And humbly, yeah, and vulnerably. And maybe that's something that's really important, isn't it? That actually, at the moment, it seems like we don't have very many concrete answers about the shape of the future. And I guess they emerge over time, but it's living with that uncertainty rather than trying to fix the uncertainty or find the answer. And the pioneers that I work with often have those kinds of experiences. They're actually good at listening. They're good at being adaptive. They like to experiment and take risks. And things don't often work out, but that's part of the learning journey. Actually, you learn a lot sometimes from when things don't quite work out. They're good at co-creating and they're good at persevering as the sort of five qualities of a pioneer. So they may well also be important people to listen to and have conversations with. We're not all called to pioneer in the way that they are. Some are, some aren't, and that's totally fine. However, I just think they may have some experiences and insights that could help other leaders to navigate uncertain times, which could feel different and scary and complex at times, but those qualities might help us journey through it.
Mm, which takes us nicely back to noticing, which is where we started.
Exactly.
Well, thank you, Ed. Is there anything else that you want to say as we finish?
No, I think it's a fascinating conversation. And I've learned something too, actually. So always good to talk.
Great. And if people want to continue the conversation with you, how do they contact you?
Yeah, so you can email pioneers@churchofengland.org. So if you want to find out more about who pioneers are, what they do and why, then drop an email to that and it will get through to us.
Brilliant. Thank you very much. So this was Claire Pedrick talking to Ed Allsworth-Peter. Thank you.
You've been listening to The Coaching Inn. Find out more about us at www.3dcoaching.com/b-developed.